politics, the bush, and the future of our regions. You're listening to Weatherboard and Iron with Barnaby Joyce and Matt Canavan.
Well, here we are again on Weatherboard and Iron, and it's great to have a person who I actually get along with, but many would say is probably on a different side of the political fence on a lot of issues, not all issues, and that is Andrew Wilkie, member for Clark, former member for Denison, independent.
G'day, Barnaby. Thanks for letting me on your podcast this week. I think we're probably an unlikely pair, although no less or no more unlikely than when I went to London last week with George Christensen.
Yeah, and we're both from Tamworth. So,
And we're both born in the Tamworth Base Hospital.
Well, there you go. And I suppose that is the issue. It's I'm a former chair of the National Security Committee, so I think I have some reason to talk about this, but it's the Julian Assange issue. Now, for me, it's I haven't met Julian Assange. I'll be quite frank. I don't know whether if I did meet him, I would like him. I don't know. I've never met him. For me, this is a principle of the sovereignty of Australian laws and this ludicrous position we have got in, that we're going to look like we're sort of complicit, that we have this extraterritoriality of a third country, which an Australian citizen was never in, that has deemed a crime has been committed against them. So we're going to sort of be part of or blind to sending that person to a third country to go to jail for 175 years for something that wasn't a crime in Australia. Now, you've met Julian Assange. Give me your rundown of it.
Well, before I talk about my impression of Julian Assange the man, can I just say I agree with what you just said. Regardless, actually, of whether or not you think Julian Assange is a journalist and what you think about him personally, this is a lot to do about sovereignty. And I find it remarkable that the United States, which I'm quite fond of generally, but I disagree with the US strongly when they say that they have jurisdiction over citizens of other countries anywhere in the world. Mm-hmm. I mean, that obviously is a madness. But in the next breath, the US also says that not only do they have jurisdiction over Julian Assange, but they don't and won't extend to him the protections of the US Constitution, and in particular the First Amendment, which guarantees freedom of expression and freedom of the press. So I think in this case, the US is trying to have it both ways. And as far as sovereignty goes, I think this is the time for the Australian government to assert its sovereignty and the rights of an Australian citizen.
Well, Andrew, can we just go through some, for those who are probably not aware, just through some of the particulars of this case, and please correct me where I'm wrong. So we had a person by the name of Julian Assange, and as you're well aware, WikiLeaks was the publishing of certain documents that had been given to him by a third party. That party at that point in time's name was Bradley Manning, now known as Chelsea Manning. But the only thing that's important about that is not that Julian Assange broke into a building or stole this, and he wasn't in the United States when this happened. A third party gave him access to this.
That's right, Barnaby. Then Bradley Manning, who was a soldier in the US military, he got a hold of this material and he handed it over to WikiLeaks, just like any number of people might hand over information
to the Daily Telegraph.
To the Daily Telegraph.
So, or the Australian.
So any
the
suggestion
ABC.
That's right. So any suggestion that WikiLeaks hacked into the US computer system and stole secret information is just one of the many myths about this whole thing.
And Julian Assange was not in the US, and in Australia at that time, this was not an offence in Australia.
That's correct.
So he committed no offence in Australia. The Americans then deemed that he'd committed an offence in the United States. I can understand quite clearly that if I'm in the United States and I commit an offence in the United States, I'm responsible to the laws of the United States. Just if I'm in Fiji and I commit an offence against Fijian law, I'm responsible to the laws of Fiji. But I cannot understand how, if I'm in Australia or, you know, England, and America, the United States of America, deems I've committed an offence against them, that will then be a party to extraditing an Australian citizen to a third country, whether that's Julian Assange, Jane Smith, Bob Brown, Barnaby Joyce, Andrew Wilkie, or whomever you wish to name. Because that is the principle that I find so offensive, that we're standing by and creating excuses for this. I mean, what happens if in the future there's a trade agreement, and China says, well, for you to deal with us, we have to have the same rights as the United States. So if you want to extradite people to the United States who never committed, who were never in the United States when a crime was committed, we want you to do the same for China.
This will establish a very, very alarming precedent. If the UK does extradite Julian Assange to the US and if the Australian government is okay with that, then a precedent is set that whenever an Australian citizen, and in particular an Australian journalist, if he or she reports information that offends a foreign government, does that mean that we are okay in principle in future that that foreign government can demand to get their hands on that Australian and maybe that journalist to send them back to whether it's Beijing or Saudi Arabia or who knows where? Of course, that would be a madness, but that's the precedent that we risk setting here.
An insult against Quranic law, so you go off to Saudi Arabia. An insult against the Chinese government, so you go off to China. And you've said the wrong thing about Vladimir Putin, so they send you off to Russia. And what annoys me, Andrew, is people say, well, with Annika Smithurst from the Daily Telegraph, that it's wrong that she should be prosecuted or pursued by reason of attaining a leak. That the ABC, they find it an offence that people go into their office to look at leaks from third parties. Yet I'd have to admit, the media has been rather silent on this issue. It's like, oh, well, now, you know, we'll just sort of sit back quietly. And I get a whiff of hypocrisy about that, because I believe that this should be something where they're not making a judgment about Assange, but are making a judgment about the process. Now, you went to London. Tell us about your meetings with Assange there and what you could add to this debate and enlighten us further about that meeting.
Okay, well, last week, LNP member George Christensen and myself, we headed off to London for a few days.
George, a very well-noted left-winger. There's right-wingers.
Yes, an unlikely duo, but it was fun. I got to know George, and on this issue, we're peas in a pod. So we went off to London. Our first meeting with Julian Assange at Belmarsh Prison was cancelled.
Tell us about Belmarsh Prison.
Belmarsh Prison is a very large maximum security prison in the eastern suburbs of London. It's where the worst of the worst go, you know, terrorists and all sorts of bad people.
So why is Assange there?
It is an unlikely place for an Australian journalist, and I don't know if you agree or disagree on the journalist bit here, but an unlikely place for an Australian
journalist. I agree with the process, and he has won a Walkley Award, so journalists obviously believe he's a journalist.
Okay, and some Australian journalists dispute that, but I think they're being a bit precious. He has, as you say, Barnaby, he has won a Walkley Award and a number of international awards.
So someone thinks he's a journalist.
Someone thinks he's a journalist. I think he's a journalist. Anyway, an unlikely place, Belmarsh Prison, it's a big, imposing, very threatening place. And all who need to see Julian have the same experience. It's hard to see him. In fact, some people say it's harder to break into Belmarsh than break out. Julian is clearly getting special treatment by the British authorities. So the first appointment was cancelled. As luck would have it, we could stay on a bit later, and several days later we got to see Julian. Mind you, it wasn't easy to get into the prison. Just a little funny aside, Barnaby. George and I have almost navigated, you know, all of the security processes, dog sniffer dogs, x-rays, being frisked. And one of the guards found the tiniest little hole in the bottom of my suit breast pocket, about the size of a 5-cent piece, and said, no, you can't have torn clothes, you've got to leave. So they threw me out of the jail. And I had to dump my jacket and then go through the whole thing again. Long story short, we got into the jail eventually, 20 minutes late, but we still had to wait 20 more minutes for Julian. All the other prisoners were in the visiting room, but no, Julian gets treated specially by the jail authorities for why, I don't know.
Is that because you think the United Kingdom find him a threat, or the United States want him treated differently?
Barnaby, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But maybe they think that someone who's charged with 17 counts of espionage and one count of hacking, maybe they think he's a very dangerous man, but I don't get that. Anyway, eventually they brought him in about 40 minutes late, and George and I had an hour and a half with him.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose the first thing we wanted to check on was he's an Australian. You know, how you going? How you going, mate? How's your health? What are your circumstances? And he's had a haircut and a shave since those photos when he was released from the Ecuadorian embassy. And most of the time he appeared to be holding up okay, but every now and then I'd get glimpses into him. He'd drop his guard and you'd see that's a man under great pressure.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's been sort of self-incarcerated in the Ecuadorian embassy for 7 years and he's been in Belmarsh in solitary confinement for the better part of a year.
Mm-hmm.
I could see why the United Nations Special Rapporteur on Torture assessed him as having been subject to psychological torture. That sounds about right to me. He's in a very fragile state.
Well, I see it as an issue. I mean, this is why I think there should be solicitors who have respect for their profession should be lined up saying to our government, this is an absolute disgrace. It's an issue about jurisdiction. It's an issue about jurisprudence. It's an issue about our nation's sovereignty and what exactly does that mean. Surely it means, if anything, that people abide by Australian laws and have the protection of the Australian government as long as they've abided by those laws, regardless of what another nation, how they may perceive our laws. And certainly if a person commits a crime in Australia, to be tried by Australian laws, sent to an Australian jail, and prosecuted as such, not bundled off or be a party or complicit in the bundling off to a third country for which they were never in, and in Australia's case, no offence was committed. Now, if I just go to something, just so you know, we clear the air on something, there was also the issue about the alleged rape case in Sweden. Now, from my knowledge, that case has now been dropped. I've got absolutely no problems with Julian Assange being extradited to Sweden to face charges there if they need to be substantiated and processed. But exactly where is that case at the moment?
Well, it's been dropped and it's beyond the statute of limitations. I personally would have liked a cleaner resolution to that allegation, mm-hmm. because obviously an allegation of rape is a very serious allegation and there needs to be a very clear resolution. As it turned out, though, he was never charged. He was never convicted. The Swedish authorities are not pursuing it and the matter is over. Now, a rape allegation is very serious, but so is also the presumption of innocence until proven guilty.
Exactly.
And in any case, it's not the substantive matter here. We've got
exactly.
To, we've
I think got, that's a big issue that... But if we don't mention it, people will say you avoided it.
Yep.
So it's very important that we deal with it. There are two different issues, and one is not a precursor nor a determinant of the other. They are separate issues, but what I like about it, if there's anything to like about it, if there's a case to answer in Sweden for something an individual did in Sweden, then I must go to Sweden, if that's where they committed it, and answer that case.
Yeah, but can I just jump in there, Barnaby?
Yeah.
Can I just jump in, though, that people who are listening to this, who are particularly interested in the rape allegation, might be thinking, yeah, but he sought refuge in the Ecuadorian embassy to avoid extradition to Sweden for the court case to be pursued. I ask people to understand he sought refuge in the Ecuadorian embassy because he was fearful of being extradited from Sweden to the United States. So his refuge in the Ecuadorian embassy wasn't because of concerns about the rape allegation. It was concerns about extradition to the US for the substantive matter. Now, can I just focus on this? The substantive matter, it's not about the Democrat National Convention emails. It's not about a whole lot of other things. The US extradition is based solely on WikiLeaks' behaviour during 2002-2011 and solely on WikiLeaks' revelations about the war in Iraq, the war in Afghanistan, the conditions at Guantanamo Bay and the so-called embassy cables. That's the substantive matter.
And where was he during that period of time? Did he ever go to the US during that period of time?
I believe he went briefly into the US to address a group in Washington,
mm-hmm.
But no one can reasonably say the offences were committed while he was on US soil.
Well, no one can reasonably say they're an offence because in Australia they're not, and I think that's a crucial thing. And if they were an offence in Australia, then he should be tried in Australia. If I might just point to another issue, because I know that I'll give a personal story here. I remember when the David Hicks case was on. Now, one of my hardest days in this parliament was when I stood up in the joint party room and told John Howard that I didn't support our current position on David Hicks. Does that mean I'm a big fan of David Hicks? Not at all. I wouldn't walk across the road to talk to him. I don't have any sort of semblance. I probably would distinctly dislike the guy, I think, from what I've seen, if I met him. But it wasn't about David Hicks.
It's nothing to do about David Hicks.
It's a principle of law. Now, what was interesting about that, there was an incredibly conservative person. In fact, he'd been president of the National Party. He was the state president of the National Party. His name was David Russell QC. Absolutely super conservative. And he came up to me. There was two people who were really... He came up to me and he said, "It infuriates me that our nation has become so gullible, so naive and so dopey, as they're going to step aside from the legal principle because of a personality. The legal principle should not be impugned and should be removed from personalities. It stands alone. You follow the principle." And him saying to me, he said, "I will be the first person to sign any petition you come up with because this is a disgrace." Now, later on, other people saw it as such, and the process was changed. The reason I put that forward is I think people can get tribalised about this. They talk to friends, say, "Oh, well, if I'm on the conservative side, I can't support this matter that's pertinent to a man by the name of Julian Assange. And if I'm on the other side, I should support it." No, you've got to think outside the box and say, do I support Australian law, Australian sovereignty, the principle of jurisdiction, the principle of jurisprudence, or from time to time, do I just put it aside because it's convenient?
Yeah, and look, it's telling that, if I had a text or a comment on a tweet this morning, someone was saying, you know, you're supporting a rapist. Well, look, I just ask people, I beg people, put aside your personal views about Julian Assange. In some ways, this is nothing to do with Julian Assange.
Exactly.
It's about high principle. And you know, if you believe in the rule of the law, then believe that it's up to a court to find someone guilty of an offence. And it's not our job in the court of public opinion to find anyone guilty of anything. Can I add? Probably this is in addition to what you've said, Barnaby. I'm also very, very fixated on the point about journalistic freedom and the right of a journalist to publish information in the public interest, including when they feel they have hard evidence of official misconduct. And whether it be journalists in Australia or WikiLeaks in Europe and Julian Assange in London, we've got to fight to maintain that. And I think it's worth noting that WikiLeaks... people on the left criticise WikiLeaks for releasing information, you know, harmful to the Democrats, and people on the other side are criticising them. It actually backs up the assertion that they're journalists, because WikiLeaks actually published information harmful to the left and to the right,
which is what they're supposed to do. Now, what is the process now with Assange? Where exactly is this now? What would on this current trajectory, where is this individual off to?
Okay, well, he's been in the news a lot this week because this is the first week of the extradition hearings in Woolwich Court, which is literally just outside Belmarsh Prison. So this week, his defence and the US government are making their opening remarks and laying it all on the table. They'll then break until May, when they'll resume for three more weeks. And then a decision will be made about whether or not he's extradited to the US. If he's extradited to the US, he will then face a US federal court where they will explore 17 charges of espionage and one charge of hacking. If he's convicted of those offences in the US, he could be jailed in a US federal prison for up to 175 years. If the extradition is thrown out...
And where would he be held in prison in the United States?
Oh, who knows? Some crappy US federal prison for what is effectively... it's a life sentence, effectively a death sentence. Now, if the extradition is thrown out, it's unclear what could happen. I suspect he would be deported to Australia.
Yeah, fair enough. I've got no problems with that.
Yeah, and then there'll be questions for the Australian government about, you know, what happens what happens next. I'm hopeful it will be thrown out of court for a number of reasons. One, I think he's a journalist who's just doing his job. Secondly, there's the revelations that his confidential conversations in the Ecuadorian embassy with his lawyers was eavesdropped on for purposes unknown, but some people...
Oh, recorded. So the client's list of privilege was breached.
That's right. So it would be tainted evidence. There's also the issue that the UK extradition arrangement with the US... specifically does not allow for extradition on political grounds. So there's a number of reasons that the extradition could fail. We just have to hope that the court gives everyone a fair hearing.
Well, this is why, you know, so it's a call to arms for all you people in the legal fraternity out there. If you respect your fraternity, remember, I think of it in a sort of pictorial sense. You have the lady who's got the blindfold of the scales with the sword. Now, the principle of the balance of evidence and blind to the person as to who it is, not making an opinion about the person. It doesn't have underneath that for notation from time to time. This is supposed to be in perpetuity. So it's not an issue about Assange. It's an issue about the process of law, which so many people hold as one of the primary reasons that we live in this great nation called Australia. And if you go and start chipping away on that little edges, say, oh, well, this time, because, you know, because we get along with the United States and they're jolly good people, we're going to do this for them, and then we'll do this for some other country, we'll do this for China, then we'll do this for another nation, you're actually breaking down almost that sacred contract of what Australia is. And that is what I find has to be a rallying cry for people to say, I don't give a toss about Julian Assange one way or the other, probably don't know whether I'd like him, never met him. But by God, I believe in Australia's legal process. And if it means anything, it means the same for everyone.
And any one of us, for any number of reasons, might find ourselves before a court one day or relying on the fairness and thoroughness of our legal system to protect our own rights and our own interests. And if we want to have confidence that it'll do the right thing by us in the future, then we need to protect it and preserve it now.
And by the way, if you want to meet someone who's had a WikiLeaks file published about them, it's me. So it was probably nothing more than you could probably have worked out yourself. I remember actually bringing it up with Barack Obama, President Barack Obama. I said, I suppose you've read the WikiLeaks file on me. That's the kind of thing that's irrelevant. And there must be, there's a sense of offence by so many people in the United States, but that does not give them a right over our sovereignty. That gives them a right to feel offended, but it does not give them a right to get an Australian citizen, take them over to the United States and put them in jail for 175 years. You know, that's not their right.
For basically doing their job as a journalist.
Yep. And anyway, that's good. I really appreciate you coming on to our podcast and giving us, Andrew, your insights. And I think this is hopefully going to inspire some people to quietly consider what their thoughts would be on this. And if by so doing they feel motivated, they should contact their local members of parliament and make their views known, because I think that's important. And if I may be so bold as to say, if you're a person in the legal profession, the legal fraternity, it's you are the one who should be first on the phone, because otherwise you're saying a whole profession that supports your life from time to time can be put aside for whatever is the whim of the day.
And it's very disappointing that some of our colleagues, you know, good men and women, have been spooked by the Assange issue and they don't want to go anywhere near it because it's controversial. There's all these allegations swirl around about Julian Assange and they think it's easier just to leave it well alone. Well, I'd encourage our colleagues to remember what's at stake here, what the substantive issues are, and to fight for the rights of an Australian citizen and not allow him to be extradited to the US.
When you're scared to speak is the time you should. That's I always look at politics. Thank you very much, Andrew Wilkie, and we will get ready for another podcast at another day and... gives you an uninterrupted view of the political discussion in this wonderful boarding school called the Parliament of Australia.
Thanks, Barnaby. Thanks, mate.
Thank you for listening to Weatherboard 9. We've got about 2,000 plus subscribers now, and I want you to be one. So if you listen to this and think that you want to be part of this process, then go to your favourite download place, imagine Apple or Spotify, and subscribe and become part of the team. Alternatively, you can just go to weatherboardandiron.com.au and follow the process there.